Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted cannabis podcast host. I'm here with Just Jay, who's going to introduce himself. He's my sometimes co-host on this show, but I thought it'd be good for us to do a special episode, learn a little bit more about him, his background, what he's been working on, because he's a multiple layer entrepreneur. So let's hear from the man himself. What would you say you do here, Jay?
I'm a community builder. I'm a thought builder. I think that at the heart of what I am is that's what I am. I'm a systems builder. I spent my life kind of just looking at the way that we interact, as people, you know, and just trying to figure out if there's a better way and like why we do the things we do. So a lot of everything that I put out in the world is about intentionally, constructing and being the architect of your better self and your better life, whether that's, you know, good woods and creating a ritual and intention in how you smoke and how that goes through, or whether it's the books that I'm writing about belief and philosophy and all those other things. It's all the same thing.
Tell me a little bit about that life. Where did you start, and what are some of those experiences that you saw? A lack of systems, a lack of organization that's kind of planted in you. I want to see some change.
Well, you know, I think you only have to look at my upbringing, right? Young black boy in Jackson, Mississippi, at a time where racial tension is still very prevalent and not very covert, very overt. And so already there were these social systems that I felt like I was living in and I had been born into that didn't really serve anybody, right? And then I grew up in a church. So then I had these religious systems that I grew up in that I'm also looking around like, this isn't working. Like there are lots of people who are engaging in this. I mean, the church may have 1,000 members or more, but I can look in people's lives and their families. I can talk to my friends, the other kids, and I can see that this isn't working. And I'm looking at all of these systems that I see we've built our lives around, that I see that as a young child growing into maturity, I'm being told, you know, adopt this system. This is how we do it. This is how life works. And I'm looking at it going, this is broken. Like, can't you see this isn't working? Why are we continuously handing down things to people that it's just tradition, but we know in our own lives how much it has failed us. And so I just really started thinking like, you know, grow up in a church, they tell you that the world is written off. They tell you that the world's going to end. It's a wrap. Save yourself, yada, yada. But I really started thinking that if people really focused on fixing themselves, like truly, earnestly, honestly, one at a time, then all the gloom and doom that is predicted, maybe we wouldn't have to happen. Like there is another scenario where we get our stuff together. And that's what I'm all about. Just all of us getting our stuff together, going for the win-win, because it's possible.
I definitely agree. I grew up in not the church, but churches. Like I'm pretty sure my mom took me to 20, maybe 30 different churches growing up. She was a church hopper trying to find comfortable, you know, try to find the match, you know, yeah. The right theology, the right time, this and that. And I resented it, but now I kind of appreciate it. Looking back, because there was a lot of that end times theology and a lot of use of it to kind of scare people into just control, just, hey, you know, just focus on this, just focus on the church, you know, come in tithe, stay here and you'll be safe. Like you live in a fallen world. But I really feel like they've, you know, from a spiritual side, from a religious side, from, you know, a faith kind of side, like that's not like if you just read the red letters of what Jesus himself said, like that's not what he was about. He's one, like, you know, write everything off. The whole world's fallen into a fiery lake and just, you know, focus on yourself, like focus on just the church. First off, the church didn't exist when Jesus was there. It didn't exist. Right. It came after. But even the word church has come to mean some building and some pastor. You know, pastor occurs once and it's called a shepherd, and it ain't what we see in America. Like, it's not. So, you know, like, I definitely hear that call of like, what could we do if we've centered ourselves and actually embrace some sort of positive messaging? Like, how can we build something better if we're not just like, oh, it's all going to hell?
Exactly. Or if we're not all trying to carve out our own little section, right? We're like, what gets me so much is I love what your mom did by going from church to church, right? Now, in the church I grew up in, that was despised. It was down talked. That was something you did not do. You might as well have just, you know, slapped Jesus in the face as far as they were concerned, right? I think it's because while the reasons people give are for sectarian protection, and I think that's partially true, I think you really hit the note on the head, the hammer on the head, or the nail on the head, excuse me, when you said it's about control, right? People build up denominationally, right? Even between, if you just take Christianity, if you don't even take like Christianity versus Islam versus Hinduism versus all the other faiths, right? You just look at Christianity, there are so many different denominations of Christianity, right? And it's mind-boggling because it says, are you guys all the same? Are you all believing the same truth or no? And if you are believing the same truth, why do we continue to create these walls between each other, right? And if you're not all saying the same truth, then that's kind of weird. And you guys should get together and talk about it because you're all going from the same book, the same character. So like a lot of what I do, it's been who I was as a leader, as a student leader, on my high school campus, as a student leader on the FSU campus when I was in student government, as a president of my fraternity, just everywhere that I am, even as an elder in the church, I have always been about breaking down those artificial walls that separate our perception and helping us all to see that we're looking at the same thing.
Now, tell me about the intersection of being an elder in the church and having a cannabis-oriented company.
Let me tell you, that's an intersection with a lot of vehicular accidents. that's a problematic intersection. So I actually came up with the idea. So first, you got to kind of look at my story in like scope, right? And I'm, without digressing and falling into my ADHD trap, I really believe that we are essentially energy, right? Energy and matter. If you study physics, you see that there's always a trade-off between the two, right? And neither one is created or destroyed. Either you have energy that manifests as matter, or you have the matter breaks down and it leads to energy. Here's my point, though. My point is, I've always believed that we are energy, and our life has kind of a frequency to it, right? It has its crests, it has its troughs, but we are moving through space and time. And that in doing that, it's a journey that is really individual, right? You're really on your own path, and you really, and the key to your own path is being really honest with yourself. So I still have to say this. As I look at the scope of my life and the rhythm and the frequencies, I was raised and born in church, but I was always like a questioner. I was always like, why? You know, don't just tell me this is what we believe. Tell me why. Show me the scripture for that scripture, and then we're going to look at the translations. Like, I don't want to just believe something because somebody said it. It's just not there for me. So my father smoked cannabis before he died. I didn't get to talk to him about it because he died when I was young. But I was a straight-laced kid. I mean, as straight-laced as a kid could be, right? I was a church kid, but I was kind of still a kid.
Hold on. I got to pause you for a second. My dog's going nuts. One second.
Sure. I could probably answer that question better. I should have done some more water. Just went to grab some more water. All right. Oh, yeah. Time. Okay. So I guess I should start that question from over. So with the intersection of Goodwoods and God-fearing. Right.
That's yeah. Where we were. You had just said, you know, your father smoked cannabis, but he passed away when you were young. So you didn't get to ask him about it, and you were about to get into it.
Right. So I was very straight laced. No cannabis. I didn't even smoke anything cannabis related until I was in my freshman year of college. And it wasn't my friends. I told my friends no. It was my family, right? My brother and my cousins or whatever. And they were like, hey, you know, you never smoked before? Let's smoke. So, and that's how I got introduced, right? But what I found was just about 3 or 4 years ago, I was diagnosed with ADHD, which I think is terrible. I'm 48, right? It's a long time coming for somebody to tell me this is what the problem was. at this point, it's like, why even bother? But it did answer some things for me. There's studies that show that that THC acts differently on the brain, even if you get it from hemp or whatever, right? On an ADHD brain, right? Whereas it excites a lot of people's brains to make them more this, more that, more creative, whatever. For ADHD brains, in some cases, it's been shown to kind of quiet the noise, narrow the focus. And so I found that useful for me, right? Yeah. My brain never stops working. It's always going. So then I'm looking at this dichotomy between what the church tells me is evil and what I know to be good for myself, what I know to help me process and center and, you know, whatever. So then I have to make a decision. Am I going to adopt the beliefs and the principles and the values of a group, or am I going to adopt the beliefs, principles, and values that align with who I am in my own personal experience and my life, right?
Yeah.
And then, and the clincher for me, for all the Bible people out there who are like, oh my God, clincher for me was this. That scripture that everybody goes to about the path to hell is wide, right? And the path to heaven is straight and narrow. Now, here's a thought. If we're all doing the same thing, right? If we're all walking along arms linked in groupthink, that's a pretty wide path. But now if I'm on my own individual journey and I'm just like, hey, you know, I'm trying to get in touch with the divine source inside of me, and I'm trying to deal with God, and I don't want God to be like the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I want him to be the God of Justin, right? Well, then that's a different kind of thing, right? And that looks a lot more straight and narrow than this, let's all do the same thing and hope that we can get into heaven on a group discount. So once I made that decision and did that kind of math, I was like, I'm going to choose me. Now, I will tell you, there was a lot of pushback. Like I say, I came up with the idea for Good Woods back in 2003, back in the early 2000s.
And just share exactly what it is in case somebody jumps in and
what's a Good Woods? I had one with me. but a Good Woods is a wooden holder for whatever a person chooses to smoke, right? It can also double as an incense holder too. I just don't know if people know that or not. If you just turn it upside down and set it up, put your incense sticks in there. So it really does, it really is a tool for ritual, right? The idea here is that when people are smoking, particularly things, you know, they roll themselves or whatever, or even if it's a pre-rolled cone, there's always that moment where it's too hot to hold, or where your lips are burning, or you have to do something that's very unbecoming of you, or you need tweezers, or you need something else. There's always this adjustment that takes place that doesn't allow you to just do the thing from start to finish without interruption and with intention. So I curated Goodwood. It's a holder. It's about that long, about two lengths of my finger, about 60 millimeters long. But it holds everything, cigars, torpedo cigars, cone cigars, self-rolled cigars like joints, blunts, pre-rolls, that kind of things. It holds all those things, gives you like a really smooth pull, doesn't burn your lips, doesn't burn your fingertips. And then what I found in my feedback from people and my own experience is I actually ended up smoking less because I was getting more of a direct delivery of the smoke or whatever in my inhalation. So I was actually able to do more microdosing. I created it because it does help with the whole experience, makes it better. It's cooler smoke, doesn't irritate your throat. You know, your hands and fingertips and lips are all doing better. And it's like a cigar at that point, right? It's a lot easier to hold. So for a lot of people who turn to cannabis or hemp because they have muscular situations, right, and these cause dexterity problems, this is the solution for them. Because it's big enough for them to hold, no matter what, how small or how large it is, the thing that they're smoking, but it's like very convenient too, right? And it has the ability for you to put a filter in if that's what you want to do. So that's kind of where I went with it. I started in 2003. My friends had like a ink pen, and they took the center of the ink pen out, and they put the end of whatever they were smoking, like the roach or whatever, in there. And I hated roaches. It's just wasteful. I'm an economics major. I hate waste. Anyway, so they put it in there. And I'm thinking, that's cool, but it's plastic. It's going to burn. This is not a solution. So I started working with bamboo. And eventually, I went from bamboo to walnut. And then worked with some other woods or whatever. But that was the thought back in 2003. So then when I get married, right, fast forward to 2005, I get married and my wife is like, no. She's like, we're in the church. We don't do this. I'm like, even if I'm not smoking, it helps people, you know, smoke better. She's like, well, you shouldn't be helping people do stuff that's wrong. I'm like, I don't think it's wrong, but we're going back and forth. I'm an elder in the church. She's like, no, you know, and I'm like, I don't see why, because somebody in the church could work at a beer factory and you wouldn't, you know, or they could work in the army or do whatever. People do things for their livelihood that may not be whatever the church is saying they should be, that everybody should be doing, but you're participating in society, so you fill your role. Anyway, she gave me lots of pushback. Then, unfortunately, at 7 years into our marriage, she passed away after a 2-year fight with cancer. And which is also ironic because she had breast cancer that turned into lung cancer. And this was the woman who refused to smoke. And I'm like, oh my God, look at the irony. Huh. And I'm just, you know, saying. And so I'm looking at, I'm like, she had this horrible experience that had nothing to do with smoking, right? But she still went through it. But then when she passed, I said, you know what? I feel like this is something God gave me. So I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to do whatever, I'm going to use whatever he gave me to take care of the people he put in my life. Like my kids from my first marriage, my current wife or whatever. And so that's how I pushed past. There's still pushback. People still don't see how I can walk in both things and both things be true. But I think that's the problem with people. I think we're so focused on being one version of ourselves to everybody, of presenting this thing, this, and it's just a presentation, because if we're honest with ourselves, we're also multifaceted, right?
Yeah.
Some days we are kind and benevolent, and some days we are cold and we are detached, and neither one of those things are completely who we are, other than they reflect who we choose to be more often than not. Right. So this idea that people in religious spaces have to project or perform a certain version of themselves that isn't really accurate, but they have to do it for authority and credibility's sake, I think is the thing that undermines the whole thing and has people on the back end questioning the faith and the leaders that they followed all this time. So I didn't want to do this. I wanted to be authentic.
Tell me about what happened in the middle. Like, was Goodwood's sufficient? Like, did you go into some type of career? Did you launch a business? Did you, stay unemployed for the last 20 years? Or what's been the plan in the interim? What's that been looking like for you to get to
here?
I'm
a natural born teacher. Okay. I've always been a natural born teacher. When I was in JROTC in high school, I had my own class. In the second year, I ended up being battalion commander over all the kids because I'm just a natural born teacher. I was a Sunday school teacher. I was an elder. And so, of course, when I went to profession after, you know, graduating as an economics major and doing a little banking and doing a little insurance, I ultimately landed on teaching because it was easy for me. And because I wanted to save the world, right? I wanted to shift the world. I wanted to move it. And it seemed like one of the most impactful ways to do that was to go out and find the next me in somebody's public school and keep this kid from giving up, right? So I went to middle school. I taught the middle school grades. I tutored all of them, but I specifically taught math and science from fifth grade to like eighth grade, because this is when people fall off. These are the subjects that people need. And this is that time when people decide, you know, school is not for me, or I can make it. And I was like, this is where I can be most impactful. Maybe I'll never see, you know, the ripples effects of what it is I'm contributing and pouring to these kids' lives. But I know it's out there, right? I know I'm moving the needle somewhere. So I did that I've been doing that for like the last about 13, 14 years. I'm really ready to call it a wrap just because I think I can do more good elsewhere. All that time, Goodwoods has just been like a little hobby of mine, right? I didn't really launch Goodwoods actively commercially until about last January, not this past January, but the one before then. Before that, it was just kind of hobby. Somebody did on eBay or whatever. Etsy. And, you know, my friends would ask me to send them some and stuff, and I was still making them out of bamboo. I was doing it under the name Wamboo, as a matter of fact. But to your point, I think I've always been making strides in this direction. For instance, after my first wife passed, that following April, I took Wamboo to the Cannabis Cup in Denver. It was the first time it was there, and it was widely received. It was great. I had a great time. I was even a sponsor for the event. one of the sponsors. So I said to say, I've always kind of been moving in that direction. I think the older I get, the more I realize that I don't want to die with whatever's in me still in me. Like whatever I have to put out into the world, I want to get it out there, right? You know, even in the books that I've written, right? I was telling my wife, I said, you know, I finally finished, I think, like the last book I really needed to write. I haven't published it yet. But I have like 3 books out right now. And she's like, why? And somebody's like, why so many books? I'm like, these are the things I've been sitting on for my whole life and just working in my head and living through. And it's so important to me that I get it out. So if, you know, my father died unexpectedly of a heart attack at 38. And I always kind of thought that was going to be my time to check out. Because, you know, you're a little kid. If your dad died at 38, you kind of think there's a ceiling somewhere. You know, he's the biggest, strongest guy you know, you know? So he died at 38. And so I always felt like I was under a clock. I'm 10 years past that now. And I want to make sure that whatever I have to give the world, I leave it here. And if it takes off and it blows up, great. But if just one person finds it and that becomes a stepping stone, or the first domino to fall, you know, that creates the kind of movement in humanity I'd like to see, I think I'll be happy with that because I'll know I got it out.
Tell me a little bit about writing. Is that something where, you know, obviously if you're teaching at a school, you have to write things down, but the creative process of taking a thought and following it through, finding a theme, getting it edited, getting it actually published. Did you go the self-published route? Did you find a publisher? And what's been the kind of process of bringing those thoughts into the public square?
I will tell you, writing is the easiest thing. Writing for publishing is the hardest thing, right? So as I was writing my book, initially, the first book I wrote was called Keys of the Kingdom, because at that time, it was like 2005. I was like a preacher, an elder, you know, a minister in the church. I don't know if I'd made elder yet. I was a minister in the church. I was about to get married. And I have this radical philosophy that's based in Bible, right, that I know I'm going to get pushback from. And so I wrote it like a theological dissertation. Okay. But I banged it out. I mean, from the scripture references to like the thoughts and everything, I did all the research. I banged it out. I banged it out in less than a year. I want to say in a few months. Okay. I spent the next 20 years rewriting and revising this one work because every time I read, I was like, oh, it's still too something. And I would give it to people and they would just kind of look at me like, you know, wow. And or they wouldn't say anything back. And I realized that what was so important to me that I had to write about, and that's what made it easy, because it was in me, it was on me, it was something I was passionate about. So it was easy to follow the thoughts and put them down on paper. Making those thoughts presentable, digestible, interesting to others, or getting them to see why it was interesting to me, that was the hard part. That took time. That took 20 years. Lots of revisions. And every time I would revise, I'd read it and I'd go, oh, that's weird. And before I knew it, it's like my eyes were numb to the page. It's like I couldn't read it without seeing what I'd already written. So it was really hard to come at it with a fresh pair of eyes. And then when I would read it and zoom out, it felt like a mishmash of tones and voices. And, you know, and then I find I've repeated certain things in certain areas because I'm writing stream of consciousness. And it was a whole mess. So recently, thanks to the power and the joy that is AI, I was able to self-publish and I was able to look at my work. I was able to tell my AI to take on the role of an editor and then we go through it step by step. And that's actually how I was able to finish the work. It actually led me to be able to go back and rework a book I released 10 years ago, which was along the same lines and themes, but it was me trying to make it more digestible. And that one was called The Point of Life. So long story short, yes, self-published. Writing is hard. Writing to be published. Writing is easy if you're writing from what's inside of you, from what you care about. But writing to be published is hard because getting that voice just right, to be your voice, to say what you want to say, to take the reader on the emotional and the informational journey that you want them to have to arrive at the conclusion emotionally and intellectually that you want them to arrive at, that's the kind of crafting that takes time. I think people give a lot of slack now about people writing with AI. I have a buddy of mine who just wrote a memoir. He hasn't published it yet, but he wrote it using, you know, a large language model. And I know authors are getting a lot of flack, but I do think that this technology, while it is cutting out some jobs, there's some editors, some copyright editors, the person who would have designed my book cover. There's a lot of people who did not get paid because I found a way to use an agent to do it, right? But that being said, launching a book is so cost intensive and time intensive that you really do need some things to kind of to leverage to kind of give you a way to accelerate the process. Right. So much money goes into just building the thing that you almost don't have enough money to launch it once you're out there. I've done it independently. I don't know how well read my books are. A lot of, you know, there's ebook on Amazon. There's ebooks on Amazon. There's books on my Gumroad. I know where my sales are from now when I've launched this new campaign for Eternity in Real Time. That's the latest book. But I also know that I'm a nobody with relatively nobody. With a very unusual perspective. And I know that's going to take a time for people to like see it, let it resonate, and then be able to share it with other people. And I'm okay with that. Because like I said in the beginning, I'm just trying to push the first domino. You know, if I don't see them all fall, that's fine.
Tell me about, you know, legacy. Like what do you, as you leave things behind, as you build things, like, what do you hope that a reader that picks this up is going to take away from it?
So first, let me talk about legacy. Legacy is important to me. It's always been important to me. I think I started thinking about my legacy when I was in, like, middle school. We're talking eighth grade or so. I'm like, you know, seriously, I'm, like, designing the house that my family and the in-laws are all going to live in, thinking about, like, how do we create our own little community? Like, I've always been really focused on legacy. But one of the things I've learned about legacy is you can't control it. You cannot control it. You know, I was talking to someone recently, and I gave the example of Jesus, because Jesus is one of the most famous people in the world, right? Best-selling author, if you will. But people can't agree. They cannot agree on what he stood for completely. They cannot agree on how he lived his life completely. They can't even agree if he existed. So if I'm taking my legacy and measuring it up against the legacy of the person who is conceivably, arguably done it the best out of everyone, right? Or among the best, then I have to accept that I cannot really control the narrative beyond my own perception and my own perspective, right? Me knowing what the truth is. So my legacy looks more like ideas than it does look like houses or land or money, right? Because ideas will stay. Ideas will grow. I would tell my students, I would say, look, you know, this is going to sound a little morbid and morose, but there's nothing you have right now that cannot be taken from you. Except for what's in your mind, except for your ideas, except for what you learn. Everything else, body parts, clothes, houses, family, everything. I don't know if I went this far with the kids because then they'd be crying, but you get the idea. You know what I mean? Everything else that we have, and I've seen it in my own life. My wife, you know, when she was suffering with cancer, and, you know, she was beautiful. She was curvaceous when I married her. She had long hair, nice full breasts, very, just a total 10. Then cancer came and her hair was gone and she was as bald headed as I am and her breasts were gone and her body shape was gone because she was sick all the time. And I realized that we've got to key into each other and key into ourselves for the things about us that are persistent, the things that stay, the things that don't change and wither with time and circumstance and culture and society. So when I wrote this book, my legacy in writing this book was I really want to, and I don't have the hubris of thinking I'm the first person or maybe the only person to have reached the conclusions I've reached and have attained or chosen the perspective I've chosen. But I think that it needs more voices. And I think if as more people follow what it is I'm trying to express, which is stop looking outwardly for reality. Look inwardly for what your reality is telling you about yourself, or work on you. If people would do that, man, we could change the whole world. Like, my kids, my grandkids could live in a world that doesn't have to deal with racism and sexism and all these other isms that we use to other ourselves from each other, and to give ourselves value while stealing value from someone else, right? It's all because we're all looking for external things to validate us, and we're never doing the real work, which is internally, right? And I'll say this, and I probably shouldn't, but I will, and I'll wrap on this. There are three dimensions that you learn in school, right? The first one you learn is length, and then you learn width, then you learn height. That's three dimensions, right? And then we get four dimensions, where you have space-time. That's the time and space between those three dimensions. And then where do you go, right? What other dimensions are out there? Well, the only other place to look is internally, right? That's where you turn the scope from outward projection of a point to inward, inside the point itself. And what you find when we look inwardly, instead of looking outwardly for the expansion of our consciousness, is we find that all of the causes and all of the answers, that's where they're rooted. And all the fixes come from there. So what I'm trying to do is to really get us as just people to become deeper dimensionally, right? To explore those other levels of dimension where we stop just defining our reality by external forces and external phenomena, and start really looking at what's happening in my life and how I'm responding, say, about me, and how can I fix that? And if I fix that, how much less of the fixing of the things around me will I actually have to do? So that's my legacy. My legacy is I want to help to engender and promote a new way of thinking and a new way of being.
Powerful. I'm wondering, you know, before you came on, was there any question that you had hoped that I would ask you that I haven't asked yet?
No. You asked me why the cannabis thing, which is a million-dollar question, right? Cannabis and Christianity, how you do that. I'll also throw on this. Like, so here's my thing about the cannabis thing. Let me circle back to it. Because I don't feel any condemnation, but it depends on why I do it and how I do it. Have I felt condemnation before when I was smoking? Sure, I have. And I had to look at the reasoning why. So it still goes back to the internal work. But my point is this. Christians are quick to say, you're not a Christian if you do X, right? And then they'll point to a scripture and go, well, you're not a Christian if you get a tattoo, or if you smoke, or if you drink, because your body is a temple, right? Ignoring the fact that pork is also bad, right? Sugar is also not great. Coffee is also not great. Like, there are things that we do that if we're really going to buy into this, my body is a temple and I need to have it at the highest functioning level possible at all times, then we'd all have to shift. But what we really are doing is we all know the truth. And the truth is that if it doesn't condemn me, I can go on ahead with it, right? The problem is when we look around at other people and they're not doing what we think we had to do to get grace or heaven or whatever, then we get bitter. Then we get angry. And even then, the problem's not them. It's us. It's us because we're still not at peace with our choices. So when I read about, you know, the body is a temple, and I think about people, like, you get earrings, right? You get adaptive stuff to help you hear better, right? Adaptive tech or whatever. We do the things we need to do to make our life better and to make our life work for us. And as sooner we embrace that, and we embrace in a way that gives everybody that freedom, as long as it doesn't impinge on the freedom of others, then we'll move towards society that's actually tackling problems instead of just trending and just cycling toxicity.
As a small business owner, like, I run into problems, and there's problems I still can't solve. There's always something, whether it's workflow, process, cash flow, marketing, AI, you name it. I've done 125 interviews in the past year, at least, probably more. So I'm going to give you a shot to take one question of a problem you haven't solved yet. Marketing, small business planning, finances, whatever. You put it out there now, and I'll take it to the next guest who fits the right bill and get you an answer.
Okay, so here's my problem with Goodwoods. Goodwoods is an experience. People have been smoking for a long time. So it's kind of like you do people, and this is a terrible analogy. If I had like a sales rep, they would say, never use this analogy, but I'm going to do it because I don't always do what's best, I guess. You know, religion comes to you and it tells you you have a problem. And a lot of people, some people don't even know they had a problem first, but it comes and says, you have a problem. Oh, but I have a solution to your problem, right? And I think any product has to do that, right? So with Goodwoods, because it is experiential, because you got to experience the difference, because you don't really know that you've been, that you could have been and have enjoying this better until you've enjoyed it better. I have a real, the breakdown in the business model is creating that experience so people can see that they like, oh, this works. This is good. So then my problem with Goodwoods is because it's such a niche product, I guess, and because I'm just a small guy, right? Is I can't get it to people to experience it to generate the demand that would allow me to put it in places that would make it easier for people to get it. So right now, everything is kind of just stimulated by me. So I might do a promotion with someone. Like I did a promotion with a group up in the tri-state area, up New York in there. And they do Ubers for cannabis smokers. And I said, okay, well, they like, we'd love to feature your product. And they did. I got some great footage off of that. People are like, oh my God, this is good. And I, same thing happened at Cannabis Cup. But until somebody actually tries a Goodwood, they don't really know, like, oh my God, this is really so different. That's the biggest problem in my business. It's that link between educating the public and creating that experiential moment. And that is where everything slows down. And of course, I've thought about, you know, going out to, you know, all the festivals and this and this and that, like I did with Cannabis Cup. I've given that some thought. But even that's just like, you know, it's a very slow grind. So if anybody can help me figure out how to fix that part of my engine, yeah, that'd be helpful.
I'll definitely float it out there. I'll try to distill down your example to how do you take a product that's experiential to show its value and, you know, get it more popular, build visibility, build popularity when the difference of what it can do is best experienced. So that's a good challenge. I'll float that out and I'll get you an answer.
Not to mention that, I'm sorry, just one more thing. Not to mention that anything smoking related, it's persona non grata on every social media except for X. You know what I mean? So
that's right.
That's another challenge.
That too. I know that I can get some savvy marketers to address that particular challenge. You know, I did a working with a discount vape pen, you know, talking, I just did an interview with him on Unscripted Cannabis last week. And, you know, that was his challenge too. How do we, you know, talk about market, bring out, you know, bring visibility or connect with people who are interested in something where societally there's been that no, that taboo stamp placed on it. So you're doubling down on it and hoping that we got a sweeper come in and bam, crack it out for us. Certainly a big challenge. It's always, you know, in the industries that have heavy regulation, you know, there's a minefield effect. There's the sociological side of it. And, you know, I interviewed a documentarian, Jeremy Norrie, on the show last week as well. And, you know, he ran into that. Like he now plays the game just as a gambler because he doesn't know when the algorithm is going to be like, you said the C word, no, versus on another platform, C word, okay, boom, you know, or just the right at or mentions and combination. It's a black box. You know, we're all walking up and putting our stuff in and something's coming out the other side and we're not quite sure exactly how or why or when, but I'll see if I can get you some guidance advice. I definitely appreciate your time and I appreciate your hosting coming on as co-host and having these interesting conversations. It's been fascinating. I haven't been steeped or deep in the cannabis industry, always kind of on the periphery. I worked with a couple of marketing agencies that were exclusively around cannabis over the years. So I've never been completely out of it. I'm not a regular smoker myself, but I've used CBD and used different products over the years. So it's always a fascinating talk. So thanks for co-hosting with me. Thanks for the time and conversation. I'll make sure that your site gets linked in the show notes, people that want to connect with you. Is there a particular social media channel where you enjoy conversating the most, where if somebody wants to talk to you, pick your brain, or ask questions, where should they reach out to you?
The best place for that is, I don't know, it's either going to be Substack at Today and Eternity on Substack, or you can go to my lesser used, but I'm just waiting for people to come there, Mr. Goodwoods on Facebook. That is probably the best way for you to message me and send me stuff, because then I can interact there. On Substack, it's really just a lot of my thoughts. And yeah, there's a chat, and we can definitely chat it up, but it's really more structured. So for free form communication, definitely go to Mr. Goodwoods on Facebook.
Thanks so much for your time, Jay.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to the future.